Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So in today's episode, I wanted to talk about why protein matters so much more after we pass the age of 40. After 40, it really has to become more than just something we think about in terms of, say, weight or fitness goals, or I'm going to the gym, so I must eat more protein. We need to think about it more in terms of the fact that it's foundational for living longer, but living longer healthily. So healthy aging, independent aging, for vitality now, for quality of life. It's really something that allows us to thrive versus just survive. So in this episode, I'm going to talk about why protein is so important as we age, how our protein needs change with age, how much we need, where to get it from, all of those things. So stick with me if this is something that is of interest to you, which I really hope it is. So why is protein so important as we age? So protein supports muscle, and muscle is literally health. Muscle health equals health. And after 40, it's not just about gaining muscle or, you know, toning our body. It's about preserving the muscle that we actually have and continuing to build new muscle. Muscle, again, we need to think about protein and muscle as something separate from just how we look, how strong we are. We need to realize that muscle plays a huge, if not biggest, one of the biggest roles in your entire metabolic health, which does include your metabolism, but metabolic health means so much more. And muscle plays a role in mobility, your strength, your bone density, your blood sugar balance, even your immune health. And all of these things come under that banner of metabolic health. All your organs and your tissues, and I mean all of them, are made up of proteins. Not the same as, it's not the protein that we eat, but the protein that we eat supports those proteins. And nearly every protein in your body gets replaced over the course of a year. So that basically means that your body is in this constant state of rebuilding and repair. So your tissues, your organs, your cells, they're in this constant state of repairing themselves and rebuilding themselves. But they need the right fuel or ingredients to be able to do that, to do it properly. So the proteins in the body are like the workhorses of your cells, if you like. They're really importantly supporting your structure, function, regulation of your tissues, regulation of your organs. And then the protein foods that we eat provides the building blocks. You've probably heard of amino acids being referred to as the building blocks for life. And that's because the protein foods that we eat, they break down into different amino acids, and they are essentially the building blocks for these various proteins in the body, in the cells and the tissues and the organs. So when we don't eat enough protein, our body has to make tough choices about like where it can divert those amino acids first, once they've been broken down from our food. And it prioritizes the essential organs. So it prioritizes your brain, your heart, your liver, kidneys and gut, and rightly so. But that means that your skeletal muscle, so this is literally the stuff that keeps us together, holds us together, keeps us strong, keeps our metabolic health in check, keeps us independent as we age, aging healthier. That's the first thing that to be neglected, because it's not necessarily needed for survival. It's needed for optimal health. It's needed for, you know, a good quality of life. But we can essentially survive without it, but just not very well at all. But, you know, the body is going to, whatever fuel it's got, it's going to prioritize those survival. That's literally how it works. So when we start to lose muscle mass after age 30, which happens to everybody, both men and women, but it only accelerates from age 40 in women. And that natural muscle loss coupled with, say, a low protein intake is a recipe for disaster. So we really have to look at protein as something so much more than just, oh, you know, I'm going to the gym, so I need to increase protein. We need to be looking at protein as the most crucial food group that we have to get into every single meal. So let's take a closer look at protein and amino acids. So we often think of protein as just like one thing or one food, but as I mentioned, it's basically a package of 20 different amino acids. And those amino acids, they have two big jobs in the body. The first one is building your body structure, as I said, like building your muscle, your bone, your skin, and also your organs, all of those other important organs I've just mentioned. The second thing is that it supports important functions like making brain chemicals, also known as neurotransmitters. So things like dopamine, serotonin, melatonin, GABA. We need amino acids. They are the sort of raw materials for us to be able to make those brain chemicals. We need amino acids to help us make antioxidants, to help us fight, you know, inflammation and disease. We need them to help us make various enzymes that control all of these different metabolic processes that need to happen in the body. We need amino acids to support the building of our hormones, balance of our hormones, and also to support our liver detox pathways in its detoxification. So for example, for healthy estrogen metabolism, which happens in the liver, amino acids are important for that to happen. So when you prioritize protein in your meals, especially high quality, leucine rich sources, which I'll explain more about in a minute, you're doing more than just protecting or building muscle. You're supporting your bones, your metabolism, your hormones, your blood sugar, and your energy. You're basically giving your body the fuel it needs to thrive, not just survive. So the other thing we need to understand is that protein needs change with age. So protein is the only macronutrient where the amount of it and the quality of it increases as we age. So as I've just said, but what most women don't know is that from around age 30 to 35, we all naturally start to lose muscle mass. It's at a rate of between 3 and 8% of your muscle mass per decade. But obviously over time, you know, left unaddressed, that loss left unaddressed, that equates to a lot of muscle over time. Even if we feel that we're pretty fit, we are naturally losing that. It's something called sarcopenia. It's a normal part of aging. As I said, it happens to both men and women. But for women, that process starts to speed up in their 40s and their 50s, and it accelerates even more past 60. And that's in our 40s and 50s, it's because of the hormonal shift of perimenopause and then menopause itself. And then after 60, it's that loss of, you know, complete loss of for example, estrogen and progesterone, which would occur once we are postmenopause. So that, you know, one of the key players is estrogen because it helps to protect muscle tissue. And as it starts to erratically fluctuate in our 40s, even if we still have high levels of it, its erratic fluctuations can cause changes to how we sort of build muscle and preserve muscle. And then when it eventually declines closer to menopause and then postmenopause, its muscle preserving effect is reduced and lost subsequently. And that's why a lot of women notice a sudden drop in their strength, their muscle definition, and their energy in their 40s. And usually that's with an increase in body fat, even if they haven't changed anything with their diet and lifestyle. And they feel really frustrated by that. But I have to say, it's not your fault. This is biology. But sarcopenia and its acceleration after 40, it isn't something that we just have to passively accept. We don't just go, okay, well, that's what's happening then, so there's nothing I can do about it. There is a lot we can do about it, and we have to be doing. We can counteract it. So that's the good news. And protein is your best ally to do that. So let's talk about how we build muscle in the body with protein. So protein is so, so, so essential for muscle development through its role in something called muscle protein synthesis. It's also known as MPS. So I'll just refer to it as MPS now instead of muscle protein synthesis. But if you think of that word, it basically means to synthesize something, is to make something. So muscle protein, so using protein to synthesize or make muscle in the body. That's what MPS is. It's a process where the cells in your muscles use those amino acids that come in from your protein foods to build new muscle tissue. So MPS is essential then for the growth of muscle and for the repair as well of your existing muscle. It's the primary way that muscles are built and maintained, basically. MPS can be stimulated through exercise, specifically strength training, resistance training, lifting weights, and through the consumption of dietary protein. So this brings us to leucine, which I mentioned earlier. Leucine is one of the 20 amino acids, and it is the star player amino acid that we should all know about or kind of be aware of. It's the key amino acid that signals to your body to build and repair muscle through that NPS process. Now, younger people, so I'm talking sort of under 30, they can trigger this muscle protein synthesis with smaller amounts of leucine coming in their diet. But after age 40, we start to need more leucine per meal to get the same effect as the person under 30 when it comes to making muscle. So how does that look in real life? So to restore and protect muscle as we age, we want to aim for a minimum of 30 grams of high quality protein per meal. I mean, everyone should be hopefully aiming for this minimum. But, you know, as I said, plus past 40, it just becomes even more important. We never want to let that slip as a minimum in order to help restore and protect muscle. Ideally, that minimum is 30, but ideally you're getting 40 grams, between 30 and 50 grams, ideally somewhere in the middle per meal. And that amount typically provides, so the minimum of 30 grams, if it's good quality, preferably sort of complete or animal sources of protein, you're typically going to get at least 2.5 grams of the amino acid leucine, which is the sweet spot amount of leucine to trigger NPS in older adults, so 40 plus. So according to a professor in human nutrition called Dr. Donald Lehman, your first meal of the day is the most important meal where you for you to get your optimal dose of protein. So I bang on about this all the time with clients. So any clients listening are like, yeah, I know. We want to get at least 30 grams of protein with three meals a day. But I always caveat that with especially breakfast. But I'm not saying only breakfast. I'm saying especially breakfast because that tends to be the meal of the day that we don't tend to get as much protein into it because of the, you know, the typical societal norms around breakfast for years now, which has been sweet based or toast based or something really, really quick just to rush out of the door with. So I always have to emphasize every meal. And this professor has, you know, really put this into context that the science has shown that the first meal of the day is the most important one to start stimulating this NPS. The other important time to eat protein is all the time. So ensure, as I said, the other two meals are also optimized for protein as well. So when it comes to building, repairing, maintaining your lean muscle, we know that that process of muscle protein synthesis, NPS, gets triggered by at least 2.5 grams of leucine within each meal, which is found, as I said, in about 30 to 40 grams of preferably animal protein. And that process of muscle protein synthesis, that making of muscle from this amino acid leucine, lasts for around an hour and a half to 2 hours. So that's why it's important to have three evenly spaced out protein-rich meals a day in order to keep yourself in that muscle-building state. And that would also that also means it will keep you in that kind of, you know, optimal metabolic state where your metabolism is running nice and high or fast, however people like to refer to it. Having more muscle is the best way to have a good metabolism, which also means having good metabolic health, which, as I've said, encompasses so much like heart health, brain, bone, immune, and so on. So there might be somebody listening thinking, well, what about vegan diets? Is it possible to reach that same leucine amino acid threshold? You know, can I still do this on a vegan diet? It is possible on a vegan diet, but you do need to eat about 35 to 45% more plant proteins than you would animal-based sources. Because while plants are lower in protein generally, the protein that they do contain, so also known as plant-based protein, is simply less easy to absorb in the body and then assimilate in the body than animal protein is. So even, you know, I get this argument all the time. They might say, well, I've got 30 grams of protein with all of these plant sources, but it won't be assimilated in the body as effectively or efficiently as animal-based protein will. So that's just something to consider. If you are eating a vegan diet, you would sort of need to increase your protein intake by like 35 to 45% over somebody who's relying on animal proteins. So you just need to eat more protein, more of your plant-based protein to hit your amino acid needs. But that also can mean that you've then got way more fat in your diet, way more carbs in your diet. For example, if you're heavily relying on, say, beans and lentils for your proteins, then that's also carbs. and more carbohydrates after 40 is actually very unhelpful. The way that we can process carbohydrates after 40 and definitely postmenopause changes. So something to be aware of if we're heavily relying on these carb sources, plant-based sources of protein, then we're going to be increasing our carbs. And the same with nuts. If we're heavily relying on nuts, we're going to be increasing fats. Now, good fats are wonderful. So many people are still eating very low fat diets, even without realizing it. So I'm not against that at all. But if you're going to be like, you know, downing packets and packets of almonds and cashews all day to try and hit that amino acid need, you're obviously going to be overdoing it. So that's just something to be mindful of. Yeah, because you just be eating large quantities of those foods over and over. So an example as well of needing to eat more plant protein is that your pea protein shake, say, for example, if you're using like a vegan protein shake and it says it's pea protein and it has 12 grams of protein per serving, you're likely only going to get or assimilate in the body 6 grams of that, not 12. So you'll need to calculate your needs accordingly. You know, you need to eat more of these plant-based foods to get to the same amount of your daily protein intake. Whereas if you're using a good quality whey isolate powder, which comes from cow's milk, then you're going to get the protein amount per serving that it says you're going to get. I'm going to talk more about plant-based sources of protein in a minute, because you know there's always a place for plant-based protein. We should also be consuming those foods in as part of a healthy diet, because they're full of lots of other great stuff like fiber, fats, antioxidants. So we want plant-based proteins. It's just if you know we want to kind of, when we're thinking about hitting that minimum 30 gram per meal, it's so much easier and more effective and efficient if we can get it from animal protein. So now really is the time to go extra on protein. Because of this age-related and hormone-driven muscle loss, we can't just aim to maintain. We have to be proactive. We have to want to be proactive about rebuilding and protecting our muscle tissue for life. So that's why the 30 grams per meal minimum, which should contain at least 2.5 grams of leucine, and if you're getting that 30 gram minimum from animal protein, it will. That should become non-negotiable after 40. So for example, chicken breast, beef, turkey, eggs, 100 gram serving of chicken breast provides roughly 2.5 grams of leucine and about 30 grams of protein, as does say turkey breast or beef steak. So it's just far easier to reach your daily leucine goals to stimulate that muscle protein synthesis from animal proteins than plants. That's all I'm saying. And again, you know, it's not about body composition, trying to look a certain way, trying to look toned and lose weight. Whilst those things are, protein and muscle is helpful for those things, we really need to think about protein and building muscle in terms of maintaining strength, protecting our bone health, metabolic function, protecting mobility and independence as we age, reducing the risk of falls, fractures, and frailty in later life so that we can age healthily and independently. Other reasons why protein is so important is that it's just the number one nutrient for supporting good blood sugar balance, which then helps to, you know, efficiently get the glucose broken down from the carbohydrates that we eat into the cells, keeping the cells what's known as insulin sensitive as opposed to insulin resistant, which we do not want. So that helps to prevent or reverse insulin resistance. And I've talked about that a lot on previous episodes, but insulin resistance underlies a lot of aging issues and diseases, and we really want to make sure we've got a handle on that. And that all starts with good blood sugar balance, which starts with protein. So keeping the cells sensitive to insulin is so important. Protein does that, lifting weights, building muscle, all does that as well. And the cells become less sensitive to insulin as we start to lose more and more estrogen the further we move through perimenopause and into menopause. So again, more of the stuff that helps to keep those cells sensitive to insulin is really important. Protein keeps us fuller for longer. We all know that from the old school like M&S adverts years ago. Protein keeps you fuller for longer. It keeps your cravings at bay, but it really does. It stabilizes energy levels. It supports the brain for focus and concentration. Now, for cravings, particularly in the afternoon, increasing protein, particularly with breakfast, getting that 30 gram dose in at breakfast will have an incredible impact, not only on reducing or eliminating completely your cravings in the afternoon, but on balancing your energy and your mood and also supporting your sleep as well. It never ceases to amaze me when clients and friends report back, and this happens all the time, when they report back that simply starting to eat 30 grams of protein at their breakfast has changed everything. I hear it all the time. It's what happened to me when I first started doing this, which was like over 10 years ago, probably 15, 16 years ago, I started to do this, and I have never, ever looked back. And I think I've always told this story. There was one day, because I've just never looked back. So I've always, always made sure I've had 30 grams of protein in every single breakfast since then. And there was this one day, over 10 years ago, I was on the train, I was on my way to my office job in the city, and I was feeling like quite sort of light. I thought, I've had my breakfast, I had it before I left, I just don't feel right, something feels missing. And at this point I was making these really great quality protein smoothies in the morning for breakfast that gave me 30 to 40 grams of protein. I was feeling great having this for breakfast every day. And I got to the mid-afternoon, I was feeling so hungry, my energy was low. And I just remembered, do you know what? I didn't actually put the protein in my smoothie. I put everything else in, and I just completely forgot to put the protein in. So I'd had this wonderful smoothie full of all these good fats and berries and things like that, but there was no protein in it, or not much at all, because I'd actually missed out the actual protein powder itself, which would have given me the 30 grams of protein. And so I realized that, ran out and got myself a really good quality lunch. I think I might have got some chicken, vegetables, whatever else. But for the whole day, I was absolutely ravenous, and I could not get a handle on my cravings. I couldn't get a handle on my energy levels, and I just couldn't stop craving, no matter how well I ate. I had some nuts in the afternoon with an apple, to, you know, rather than like the overpowering urge to get some chocolate or a muffin. I didn't do it. I got myself some nuts, trying to balance myself. I went home and had a balanced meal with protein, but I was so starving. All I wanted was crisps. I just wanted snacks. And it just reminded me how this is how most people live most days. A lot of people do not get anywhere near 30 grams of protein for their breakfast, and they suffer with these cravings and energy dips all day, every day. And then they get home from work, they beat themselves up because they can't stop snacking before dinner, and then they want more snacks after dinner. And actually, it's their biology is just working against them, because they're not putting that 30 gram dose of protein in at their breakfast. So I'll say it again, it never ceases to amaze me. Clients and friends report back, they say, all I've done out of all your recommendations so far is put 30 grams of protein in my breakfast. And that has changed everything already. And they're so excited, you know, because that's just the one thing they've done. They already start to feel amazing. So hopefully that hits home a little bit if you're not already doing this. So let's move on to what is the optimal amount of protein for women 40 plus. So first, what do we mean by optimal? Firstly, you've got the government and the NHS guidelines in the UK, known as the RNI, reference nutrient intake for protein. They are focused on preventing deficiency, not helping you thrive. These guidelines are looking at preventing disease. They're not looking at supporting optimal health. Optimal health is where we thrive in life. We don't just survive. We actually have all the nutrients that we need coming in to support all the cells, the organs, the tissues, so that there's not one thing, you know, the body doesn't have to prioritize all these survival systems and leave everything else to go. That is what optimal means. It's looking at optimal functioning on a day-to-day basis so we can feel good. So the government guidelines say the RNI for protein is 0.75 grams, or 0.8, I think, somewhere. 0.8 grams of protein per kilo of body weight per day for adults. That is crazy low. That is just preventing deficiency. It's not supporting optimal health. It's not supporting functions and help us thrive. So that's why we have to focus on optimal protein intake, especially when we're over 40, if we want to feel strong, protect our muscle, age healthily, support our metabolic health and all those different systems that I've talked about. But there isn't one size fits all. It does vary based on activity level. And as I said, you know, life stage and sex and age. So plus 40 and then plus 50 age, we need more. We just need more and more. But it also does depend on activity level. So there isn't just sort of one blanket statement. But what the science shows is that 1.2 to 1.6 grams of protein per kilo of body weight per day is needed to protect muscle mass and support health as we age. But a more optimal range, especially for women 40 plus and active people or those wanting to improve muscle mass, body composition, lose body fat, the more optimal dose is 1.5 to 2.2 grams of protein per kilo of body weight per day. So research, as I said, is saying the minimum we should be going for is 1.2 grams, never mind 0.8, which is what the government and NHS guidelines suggest. It's 1.2 grams per kilo of your body weight as an absolute minimum, but even more optimal for women 40 plus would be a minimum of 1.5 grams, but an optimal anywhere up to 2.2 grams of protein per kilo body weight. So you can see that as just over double your own body weight in kilos in protein. That's the amount of grams of protein per day. And you would ideally split that across 3 to 4 meals per day. But you can think of it as a kind of flexible scale. So the lower end is the 1.5 gram per kilo of body weight. That's suitable for people on less active days or rest days, you know, or people who are just sedentary overall, then go for the 1.5. Be more at or towards the higher end of 2.2 grams per kilo of body weight per day on more active days, particularly if you're strength training, or if you have body composition goals, your postmenopause or your later stages of perimenopause, you've got more body fat to lose, then you really need to be up that higher end. So how this looks practically, I'd say rather than stressing out, you know, grams per kilo all day and getting calculators out, here's a simple approach. So just aim for 30 to 50 grams of high quality protein per meal across 3 meals per day. And as I said, especially breakfast, but all 3. And that ensures that you're hitting the muscle protein synthesis threshold at each meal, because the threshold, as I said earlier, is 30 grams minimum of high quality protein in every meal, particularly breakfast being the most important meal to get that in. So doing it like this, just 30 to 50 grams of high quality protein per meal 3 times a day helps you build and preserve muscle. And if you work out that your needs based on your own weight, so let's say you want to be up at the higher, most optimal end of the range, which would be, say, 2.2 grams per kilo of your body weight. Let's say you weigh, my math is terrible. Let's say you weigh 80 kilos. So times that by 2 is 160 grams, right? So you might be thinking, well, do I just have 60 grams of protein at every meal instead of the max, the sort of range of 30 to 50? Ideally, rather than just dumping like 60, 70 grams of protein into one meal, you would just add in an extra meal that day or like a snack, sort of mini meal, say, for example, between lunch and dinner, to just add in that additional amount of protein that you need. If you're getting 50 at breakfast, 50 at lunch, 50 at dinner, but you need 160, 170 that day, then just have like 10, 20 grams of protein mid-afternoon, for example, in some way. But for most of us, so I weigh about 70 kilos. So I always shoot for about 140 a day, 130 a day, if it's a particularly restful day, as long as I'm getting 1.5 grams per kilo of body weight, which for me would be like 100 or something, 90 to 100, then I'm happy with that. But if it's a lifting day, I'll always make sure I'm up at that 2 gram mark, 2 gram per kilo body weight. So I'm looking at around 140 a day. And I do that in 3 meals, and between lunch and dinner, I tend to have something protein-based that gives me maybe 20, 30, or 15, 20 grams really of protein. So your body utilizes protein most efficiently, effectively, when it's spread evenly in those doses across the day. That is the most effective way to stimulate that muscle protein synthesis. So you might, you know, I've said you might only think that athletes or bodybuilders need to think about this, but after age 30, everybody needs to start thinking about it, because we all start to lose muscle mass gradually. But for women 40 plus, perimenopause and postmenopause, what I'm saying is that speeds up this muscle loss due to the natural drop and change in estrogen and also progesterone, as they really do help to protect muscle tissue. So we're sort of speeding things up in that phase. And also things like cortisol going up naturally in our 40s during perimenopause because of the change in estrogen and progesterone, which I've talked about on, I think, last week's episode or the one before, that naturally starts to sort of dysregulate cortisol or increase cortisol, and cortisol has the ability to break down muscle tissue. So again, another reason why we have to support, you know, protect and continue to build muscle 40 plus. So building and protecting muscle, that should be the goal for all of us as we move past 40 or even move past 35. So that means aiming for the higher end of the optimal protein range is often necessary for most women. It's, as I said, especially on workout days or when you're aiming to shift your body composition in favor of muscle than fat. So let me come back to plant protein. Let's look at animal versus plant proteins, because there's so much, there's so many like black and white, you know, it's either good or it's bad, you should be vegan or you, if you eat, you know, just one or the other, but there's a gray area. So basically when it comes to building and protecting muscle, as I've said already, animal proteins are the most efficient way to do that. They're easiest and the most efficient. They contain all 9 of the what's known as essential amino acids. There's 20 amino acids altogether in our protein foods. 9 of them are what's known as essential, meaning they can only come from food. We cannot make them in the body. And we need those in the right ratios, especially, as I said, leucine. We need that 2.5 minimum gram dose of leucine per meal to trigger that muscle protein synthesis. So that's why foods like eggs, poultry, so your chicken, turkey, and also beef, fish, these are considered ideal sources of protein, particularly as we age. But that doesn't mean that plant proteins aren't helpful or valuable. Far from it. I personally eat meat and animal products every day as my main sort of protein sources, but I also include a variety of plant-based proteins in my diet regularly, if not daily. So things like tempeh, edamame beans, tofu. I like to use silken tofu, which is you've got firm tofu, which you could just chop up and use in stir fries. I personally don't like it. It's very bland. No matter what I do with it, I don't enjoy it. But I like silken tofu because that's like, it's got the texture of egg, really. It's really silky and smooth. So you can sort of whisk it into omelets, with eggs. You can whisk silken tofu in there just to add even more protein. You could have sort of 2 to 3 eggs and then also put tofu in there. It's a whole food form of soy. So we don't ever want to get our soy from processed sources like, soy yogurt, soy burgers, things like that. We only want to be taking and soy protein as well. We just want to be getting our soy from things like tempeh, tofu, good quality tofu, organic, and edamame beans. So I like to use that silken tofu, as I said, I mix it into my eggs. I'll put it into smoothies as part of the protein content in there. I use beans, lentils. I love putting lentils into stir fries. I love chickpeas, really love that sort of Middle Eastern inspired cuisine. So I'd always put chickpeas and things. And I see it as part of my fiber, my vegetable intake, my plant intake, but it also has the added benefit of bumping up my protein intake. But I wouldn't see these foods like beans and lentils, for example, as this is my protein source of this meal, if that makes sense. It's just the sort of the carb, for me, it's the carb version, the carb portion, the fiber, the plant, but there is always going to be the other sources of protein in there. And also nuts and seeds, same thing. Really good quality nuts and seeds, unsalted, natural. These are great sources of good fats and lots of antioxidants, but I wouldn't see them as my main source of protein, but they're helpful. You know, if I'm going to have a handful of nuts as a snack, that's what I'm going to choose over something that is non-protein based. They just help to add things in. So I'm always eating plant-based sources of protein. They're nutrient dense, they're fiber rich, they support overall health. They just may be a little lower in certain amino acids, particularly leucine. But when you combine plant-based proteins well, so if you are vegan, so if you're like me, you're just eating them as well as animal foods. But if you're vegan and you're not going to eat any animal foods whatsoever, or you're vegetarian and also not having, say fish, that would be a pescatarian. But if you're vegetarian and you're having some, like eggs, for example, or some good quality sheep's or goat's dairy, then that's great. You've got a little bit more options there. But if you're vegan and you're only able to eat, beans, lentils, tempeh, edamame, nuts and seeds, if you combine them well, you can still aim to meet your protein needs. But as I said, I said earlier, you have to eat about 35 to 40% more plant protein than you do if you're eating animal protein. So that can be a lot of those foods, you know, on a daily basis. That's all. But, you know, using good quality protein powder to help supplement that can help. I'll talk about that in a minute. So the way to look at it, like the kind of bottom line of what I'm saying, is use animal proteins as your foundation for hitting your like muscle supportive protein targets, your real health supporting protein targets. Add in plant proteins to boost variety, fiber, micronutrients, like I do, especially if you're aiming to increase your total protein intake across the day. That's the added bonus of all of those foods as well. Food diversity basically equals strength when it comes to diet. We really want to make sure we're having like a diversity of different foods every day. So I can briefly talk through, just give you some examples of how much top protein sources and how much you get. So for example, like a lean beef steak cooked, so about 100 grams, if it weighed about 100 grams after it was cooked, you're going to get around 28 to 30 grams of protein. It's give or take. No one can give us an exact amount of protein unless you're really in a lab figuring that out. But it's going to be roughly between, say, 27 and 30 or 31 grams of protein in a 100 grams of cooked lean beef steak, lean beef mince. You'd get about in 100 grams. Everything is 100 grams that I'm referring to. You'll get about 25 grams of protein. A cooked chicken breast, 100 grams, about 30 grams of protein. So I've had this question a lot, which makes complete sense. So I've had people say, is this a silly question? It's not a silly question, but I've had people ask, if my chicken breast weighs 100 grams when it's cooked, does that mean I have 100 grams of protein? And the answer to that is no. It means that your chicken breast, with all of its everything in its contents, weighs 100 grams. But of that 100 grams of cooked chicken breast, you're going to get, it yields about 30 grams of protein, 28 to 30 grams of pure protein. So that's just how to look at it. I have a protein guide that I share with my clients, and it just basically says, you know, per 100 grams of cooked this, you get this much protein. You can also Google this. Like you can Google all the foods you've eaten all day and make a little note for a few days of how much protein is in the quantities of the foods that you're eating and just see what you currently get without trying. And then see where you're falling short and how you can build more protein in. So fish, all the fish, you know, 100 grams of any fish, whether it's prawns, whether it's salmon, mackerel, sardines, you know, tinned, however you're cooking it, 100 grams of those fish is usually going to yield about anywhere between 20 and 24 grams of protein. And then one medium egg is about 5 grams of protein. A large one might give you about 6, but, you know, you can usually shoot for about 5 grams of protein per egg. Let's say you're using some good quality feta cheese, or you'll get about 16 grams of protein per 100 grams. But bear in mind, 100 grams of cheese could be maybe a lot in one sitting. I probably would have a little bit less than that. Cottage cheese, 100 grams of cottage cheese, which again, probably quite a lot in one sitting, depending on how much you like cottage cheese. But that will give you about 10 grams in 100 grams. Whey protein powder is a good, you know, good option. You'd probably get, well, we'll talk about protein powders in a minute, actually. But natural full fat yogurt, I hear a lot of people say, I have protein for breakfast. And I say, what do you have? And they say, I have natural yogurt and granola. And I put some seeds on it. I'm like, great. That's about 5 or 6 grams of protein, maybe 10 at the most. So 100 grams of your natural full fat live yogurt is going to give you about 5 grams of protein. So again, you would have to, if you wanted to get 30 grams of protein from yogurt, you're eating a ton of yogurt, which probably isn't great for your gut. So, you know, just being mindful of like where your protein is coming from and how much is actually in that serving. Do you need to diversify the foods that you're including in your breakfast somehow? So tofu, 100 grams of tofu would give you about 8 grams of protein. So again, being aware that someone having 100 grams of cooked chicken breast is going to get almost triple the amount of protein than the person who's having that same amount in tofu. So just being aware, once we know these things, we can do what we need to do to make sure we're like increasing things. So 100 grams of tofu, like I said, is about 8 grams of protein. But 100 grams of quinoa is about 4 to 5 grams of protein. So you could have a stir fry. If you were vegan, for example, you could have a tofu quinoa vegetable stir fry. And that would just be helpful to increase a little bit more protein. You still might need more sources of protein in there to get things up a bit. Brown rice, 100 grams of brown rice, it has like 2.5 grams of protein. So all these little things help if you're needing to combine lots of different sources of plant proteins. Okay, so what about protein powders? So protein powders are a great way to supplement your daily protein intake if you need to. Just make sure that your protein powders are well made. They're not just cheap stuff. It's well made and it's pure and it's unflavored and completely natural. All you want to see on that ingredients list is the protein. If they're going to sweeten it with something like natural leaf stevia, that's okay. They might have some natural, I don't know, like beetroot powder or something like that in there. But ideally, if your protein, for example, is from pea, all you want to see on the label is pea protein. If it's from whey, you just want to see whey protein. You don't want to see this list of ingredients. You don't want to get these big tubs from like, you know, your high street shops like Holland and Barrett. And they've just got this long, long ingredients list full of rubbish. You want to have a pure brand. So, avoid flavored powders unless, like I said, they use natural leaf stevia. But ideally, you would have an unflavored protein powder and you would blend it in, for example, a smoothie with like berries, which would help to sweeten it naturally and give you, you know, lots of lovely antioxidants and fiber from your berries. Or you might use unflavored protein powder and put it into some yogurt or, you know, mix it into something else. So the best way is to go with unflavored. You could put it into a smoothie with pre-ground flax seeds. You could use chia seeds pre-ground as well, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, coconut milk or MCT oil or coconut oil. These are great sources of fat, really good for the brain. You might want to add some powders like raw cacao powder to give it a more chocolatey vibe. You might want to use maca powder, collagen, and just sort of blend it with water and berries. That would make a nice nutrient-rich shake. So just being mindful of where you're buying that protein powder from and what's in it, basically. So I'll also just quickly talk about why collagen powders don't actually count towards your daily protein goal. I'd see collagen as more of a kind of healthful powder just to add into your foods, but it's not technically a protein because it's not a complete protein. So collagen is basically missing key essential amino acids, particularly leucine, which remember is the critical amino acid that triggers muscle protein synthesis. That's the process your body uses to build and repair muscle. So if you're trying to get 30 grams of protein from a meal and you use a scoop of collagen powder and it contains 10 grams of protein, just be mindful that 10 grams won't stimulate MPS. So it won't support muscle growth or maintenance, and it shouldn't be counted towards your 30 to 50 grams of protein per meal goal. So if you've got 30 grams of protein in that meal and you're also going to get another 10 grams from collagen, great, that's fine. But you want to make sure you're also getting 30 grams of protein from elsewhere because collagen doesn't necessarily count towards that. But that being said, collagen can still be a useful supplement. You know, obviously it's good for, there's some research to show, there needs to be more research, but there is research to show it's good for skin, hair, nails, joints, connective tissue. I've done a whole separate episode on collagen, so scroll back to find that one if you want to learn more about collagen and what I think of it. But just think of it as a bonus, not a substitute for high quality, complete protein sources like eggs, meat, fish, dairy, you know, good quality soy or properly combined plant proteins. Collagen is not part of that. Now, lastly, before we finish, we cannot talk about increasing protein foods and not talk about digestion and absorption of protein, because how we digest and absorb our protein is the all-important thing. We need optimal digestion to get protein into the body. If we aren't digesting our protein foods properly, then we're not absorbing all of those amino acids into our tissues and cells for them to do the many wonderful jobs they do, including muscle protein synthesis. Now, digestion starts in the brain. So this means that we need to be eating in a calm, restful state before we start to eat our meals. You know, a few simple deep breaths before picking up our cutlery can work wonders whilst we're smelling and looking at our food, because that switches on the digestive process in the brain. You know, you might notice when you're in a restaurant and you've placed your order and you're hungry and you can smell and see other people's foods, you can feel that saliva starting to increase in your build up in your mouth. It's digestive secretions, basically. And within that saliva, we have various enzymes that help us to break down the food as we chew it. So we want to be in a relaxed state in order for that saliva switch to be turned on by the brain. And then we need to chew each mouthful fully before swallowing it. So we have enzymes, as I said, within that saliva in the mouth that are getting mushed up with the food as we're chewing it. So we should chew sort of 20, 30, 40 times. Really does depend on the actual food that's in your mouth. And before we swallow, we want to chew that many times just to make sure it's really like masticated, like really chewed up before we swallow it. We can't continue to chew it once it's in the stomach. So that once it's in the stomach, we can actually start that breakdown process is, you know, really ahead of the game before it reaches the stomach. Now, once the thoroughly chewed food enters the stomach, we need to have adequate stomach acid in the stomach, within the stomach, to meet that food, because stomach acid is a really important part of protein digestion. Also, I think there's absorption of iron as well and B12. So if there's any issues with stomach acid, maybe we've got low stomach acid for whatever reason, like stress. Chronically stressed people tend to have low levels of stomach acid. We tend to lose stomach acid as we age. If we have a history of H. pylori or other sort of gut imbalances, the high use of antibiotics, if we've ever had to use or do use PPI medication for heartburn, for example, all of these things are going to deplete stomach acid. I won't go into too much detail, of that today. It's like a whole other episode. But we really need to be aware of stomach acid, and we need to address if we have low levels of stomach acid in order to be able to optimize the absorption of protein and amino acids into the body. So if protein digestion isn't working well, for example, if we have low stomach acid after, say, chewing your steak or your chicken, for example, you'll likely experience bloating almost immediately after a meal, or you might have gas or belching after a meal, particularly gas and quite smelly gas, like immediately after you've eaten. You might also find undigested food coming through in your stools because it's not been broken down and digested properly by that stomach acid that we don't have. Some people can struggle to eat protein. I've worked with people in the past who've been like previously vegetarian or vegan, and they want to start eating animal protein again, but they struggle a little bit to digest it because their stomach acidity isn't used to it. And over time, where we're not eating foods that demand a lot of stomach acidity, that can start to reduce the stomach acid that we make because we're just not needing it. So those people need to build up slowly to allow their body to digest the protein. So if you notice any of those symptoms, make sure you're taking deep breaths before you eat so that you're in a relaxed state. You're switching on that saliva in the mouth. You're chewing every single mouthful absolutely fully, particularly when you're eating meat, when you're chewing meat. Chew, chew, chew really, really well. Cut the meat up much smaller than you might already do. You know, don't pile lots of other things on your fork as well. Just focus on, I'm telling myself this as well, because I tend to put loads of things on my fork. So Not wanting to go too much off topic or onto other things, but I sometimes work with clients who have got a full blood work done with their GP, and they'll show me the results. And there's a marker on there called total protein that sometimes gets tested, sometimes doesn't. And anything below 70 grams per liter would show up. It wouldn't necessarily show up as low. It wouldn't be flagged as low with your sort of regular conventional GP, but for me, or people trained in sort of functional health, functional medicine trained practitioners, we would look at that level of total protein as quite low. And it would either be that person isn't eating enough protein, so their levels of total protein are low, or they are eating enough. This is what happens a lot. As I said, they are eating enough protein in their diet, but they're not digesting and absorbing it properly. And that can be because of this lack of stomach acid, and or because they eat on the go all the time, they don't chew very well, and they are maldigesting their protein, so they're not absorbing it properly. So that's just something to be aware of, is are you breaking it down and absorbing it fully? So I hope this episode's been helpful. I hope you've learned something new and that you've been inspired to increase your protein and maybe start to increase different types of protein as well, and really make some healthy changes and start to feel better if you need to feel better. But it's not about feeling either. It's just about really looking at protein as supporting muscle health, optimal health, supporting healthy aging, independent living as we get older. So I hope you've been inspired by this today. So if you liked this episode, I'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a review or 5 stars. because that's the only way the podcast can start to reach more people. The less reviews or ratings that a podcast gets, the less it's put in front of people. You know how these algorithms work. And yeah, that's the only way I can get the episodes and the podcast itself out to more people who might need it. So thank you for listening, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.
If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.